So if you're going to try and sell me something, first of all, make it at least make me feel like you know a thing about who we are and why we would need your service and why we could use your service versus you provide this service for all these other companies and hey, maybe your company could use it too versus like, hey, I know what you guys do. I've done my research. It's very clear that I think you can use us because.
In the sales and marketing world, putting your value proposition and your features on your website and in your cold email outreach campaign is pretty common, but a friend of mine, former colleague Jason Fried and the co-founder, CEO of Basecamp, is a strong proponent of doing something a little different. Rather than communicating your value proposition and talking about things like Gantt charts, he prefers to attract his customers by speaking to the jobs they're trying to get done and the struggles they're bumping into that are preventing them from making progress. I, of course, am Josh Braun. This is Inside Selling Podcast. It's a new podcast that gives you fresh perspectives and actionable ideas for helping you start and continue conversations with people you don't know. And we do that by interviewing smart people like our guest today. Recently, I've been spending a lot of time thinking about how to get the attention of prospects for both myself and for the people that I coach using cold email. But it's not working as well as it used to. Only about 2% or so of the people respond, and people are sending hundreds of unsolicited emails every day. The templates that are available now to people allow competitors to sound just like you, and it's incredibly tough to break through. So one of the first people that came to mind as I was wrestling with this sales problem was Jason Fried. His company, as you know, has been making team communication and project management software for, I think, about 150 years, Jason. Is that right? Or not quite as much?
Closing in on 200 years. Bicentennial. This December, yeah.
This December. I've long admired Jason's approach through his books and his philosophy around sales and marketing. And, of course, his good taste in sushi in Chicago. Jason, thank you so much for joining the big show.
It's great to be here, man. Thanks.
So you've been running a small business for about 20 years, and you've also obviously built up quite a following over that time. Your email address is also pretty accessible. So am I correct in assuming that during your 20 years, on occasion, people reach out to you from a cold perspective, trying to sell you things or trying to get your time? Is that a correct assumption? Has that happened a time or two?
All the time, and many more times lately, actually. I get probably maybe close to a dozen or so, maybe more, you know, cold emails a week.
And Jason, am I correct in assuming that these emails, they fall into two buckets? So bucket number one, people asking for your time or advice, and then bucket number two, people trying to sell you something. Are those the two primary buckets? Are there others?
Yeah, the advice ones are, I just think they're different. To me, that's not a cold email necessarily. When I think of cold emails, I think of a sales email, like, hey, we've got this thing we want to sell you. That's different to me than someone just reaching out for advice. That's more like just a friendly, hey, I've got a question versus, hey, I'm trying to sell you something.
God, now you have some interesting things that you've written about in that first bucket. You know, when people call and ask you for your advice, I know oftentimes they'll try to take without giving. They'll try to pick your brain. And you have a very interesting perspective on why that doesn't necessarily resonate with you and other approaches people have used to give as they're asking for a get. We'd love for you to shed a little light on that. I think that's a really interesting tie into what we're going to be talking about today.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're asking somebody for their time, you've got to understand that's extremely one-sided ask just to begin with, right? Like, hey, you're this person who I think you know something I don't. Can I take some of your time so you can tell me what you know? Like, just fundamentally, and by the way, there's nothing... I've asked for advice many times. There's nothing fundamentally wrong with it. I just like want to present the case, which is that right off the bat, it's a hard sell, essentially. Meaning, I should say it's a hard buy for the buyer, which is the person giving you the time. Because it's like, I'm busy. I can't just give advice all day. I've got work to do. And so that's the thing I always come up against, which is like, I'd like to help and I try to help as many people as I can, but I have work to do too. So if I was to take a meeting here and a meeting there and two or three of these a day, because I could easily line those up, when am I going to do my work? And then if I'm not able to do my work, why do you want my advice? I don't even know what I'm doing if I can't do the work. So it's a struggle to figure out how to deal with that, which is one of the reasons why we write books and I write articles, is to say, like, I actually don't have anything else to tell you other than what I've already put in these books and these articles. Please read those. That's like, if we sat down, I would tell you the same thing. And I'd actually be wasting your time because you can get this whenever you want versus having to take time out of your own day to sit down and hear the same thing.
Yeah. So
now, by the way, one more thing. That's not to say I don't respond with advice. Sometimes I do. It all depends on the question. And I'll tell you this. Whenever I get a long email, I never respond. So I'll get like these long emails, someone like, you know, just going through everything and then asking like, and I appreciate that they took the time to write it, but here's the thing. It's like, I don't have the time to respond in kind. So I actually feel bad just writing a one liner like, hey, this is an amazing email, but I actually would rather just ignore it, to be honest. I feel like that's in some ways a better response than to just shut someone down if they put all that time into it. So I find that in general, if you want advice from somebody, ask a short question in a short email and make it easy for them to act on it versus like, oh my God, I've got work to do to respond to this person to put work on my plate because they just asked me some long questions. Anyway.
So interesting perspective. So if you can glean your advice from things that you've written, do that first. But if someone writes to you in a short way, are there some things that they've written to you before that stand out in your mind about, hey, you know, I'm going to respond to this person? And what are the types of questions people can ask you from a cold perspective, from an advice perspective that says, you know what, I'll take a couple minutes and shoot them off something, or I'll respond because this was sort of interesting.
Well, I'll tell you, there's a couple things. I'll start with the things I won't respond to, or I'll tell people flat out that I can't help you, which is when people are like, what should I do? I want to quit my job. Like I want to start a company. Where do you see opportunity? Like stuff like that. I don't know. I can't answer that. I cannot possibly answer that question for you. You know, things like those kinds of questions about like, what should I do? Or like, what would you do? I just don't know. I really don't know. And I can't answer. And I feel like I'd be misleading you if I said that I could. So like, those are the kinds of things I'll tend not to answer. The things I'll tend to answer are very specific things that, let me think of a good example. We're thinking of launching an affiliate program. I saw that you guys just did recently. How's it been going so far? Like, okay, I can respond to that because like, I know the answer to that. And it's not about, I'm not guessing about what they want or need. It's just like, this is actually what's been going on. I can respond. And so certainly if you're going to ask someone something, make sure you ask them something that they can answer with confidence because they actually know the answer versus if you ask me what you should do with your life, I can't possibly know the answer. I don't know you. I can't know the answer. And you're setting yourself up, first of all, to get bad advice. And also to ask someone to give you advice they can't really give you. So just, it's like not even worth asking that question. Is kind of my
that
feeling.
That said, Jason, what should I do with my life? I mean, you know me pretty well.
Well, I know you. I think, to be honest, let me tell you something that you should do. Within the next 3 weeks, you should fly to Chicago so we can get sushi, because the sushi that we're talking about, it will be gone forever.
I gotta get it.
And you'll look back and you'll say, why did I not go there one last time?
That's exactly right. You're right. Yeah. So that's the sort of a bucket of asking you for advice. Then there's this other bucket of, as you mentioned before, these cold emails that are trying to sell you something. And so let's talk a little bit about what doesn't work. You know, I'm sure, you know, being how influential you are and how easy you are to contact, I mean, your information is really easy to find. As you mentioned, you get a lot of these emails. Let's talk a little bit about the ones just that just sort of get deleted quickly. You mentioned length as one thing that automatically sort of gets someone disqualified. Are there some other things that are turnoffs, for lack of a better word?
Yeah, you know, the thing I typically don't like to see are like the first paragraph or two is about how great the service you have is, or you know, it's like, this primarily is from venture capitalists, for example. They always lead by saying, hey, I'm so-and-so from this thing. We have a $4 billion fund and we've invested in these 7 companies. It's like, I understand they're trying to establish some level of credibility, but what it says to me is form letter, because there's no chance that they wrote that unique for me. What they did was they have a template and they pop it in there and then they like add a sentence at the end. Hey, I heard recently ran into Basecamp, a friend of mine used to, I thought it'd be interesting to have a chat or talk about like how you see the industry going or something. It's like these sort of, no, you don't really care, because if you cared, you wouldn't have written it that way. also the whole idea about like, hey, I just want to catch up and see, get your thoughts on the industry. Like, what do you mean by that? Like, what does that even mean? And like, if you want to invest in our company, just say so. And if you don't, that's fine too. But like, what is this? Just, we don't need to play games. It's like when a company tries to write you, we've had some like acquisition offers over the years and they'd say something like, we're interested in, you know, exploring opportunities to work together. How about just saying like, you know, we're interested in buying your company. Just like, just speak directly. So this is, by the way, this is just me. I recognize that not everybody, like some people like the dance. I just rather like, tell me what you want. So if you're going to try and sell me something, first of all, make it at least make me feel like you know a thing about who we are and why we would need your service and why we could use your service versus you provide this service for all these other companies and hey, maybe your company could use it too versus like, hey, I know what you guys do. I've done my research. It's very clear that I think you can use us because. And when I see emails like that, I go, okay, this person put in the time at least.
And you know, so we call it like someone that connected a dot.
Yeah, because here's the thing. If you're asking me to respond to you, you're asking me to spend my time responding to you. I want to see that you spent a little bit of time asking for my response. But if it's just clearly a form letter or clearly leading with all about you and then me at the end, it's all of a sudden like the deal is lopsided right there because like I'm going to write a personal email back because I don't have a template. I don't have a cold email response template. I have you have a cold email that you're sending me, but I have to respond to what you wrote. So I have to take the time to respond. It's like you're setting someone up just to like ignore the email basically is what's happening. And that's a bad sales email if I'm just going to flat out ignore it.
And are you noticing people following up? I mean, one of the things that's make it incredibly easy now, there's all these marketing automation tools that are able to, salespeople can send 6 or 7 of these things automatically. You obviously don't have a way to respond to those things automatically. You have to process them one at a time, but are you seeing your inbox, you know, as these tools get more, less expensive and more widespread, are you seeing these follow-up emails?
Patterns. Yes, I see patterns, a couple patterns. One of them is like humor, which is really hard to pull off. I know that if you can do it, it's great, but it's hard. It's really hard to pull off.
Give me an example, Jason, of humor that's gone bad. If you can, can you think of anything, put you on the spot? Like, is it like one of these like 1, 2, or 3 emails? Like, you know,
no,
one, you're not interested.
I mean, I've gotten those too, but it's just like, you know, maybe a meteor hit your house and you weren't able to respond, stupid shit like that. Like reasons why you didn't respond to my email. It's like, I don't even know if that was an example, but I feel like I've heard that one before. It's more like just the bad humor is like comedy writing is hard. It's hard for professionals, you know, and it's hard. So I think that's one thing that's sort of a bit of a turnoff to me. The other thing, unless it's really good, then I like it. The other thing is, this whole like, hey, I know you're busy. Like when I get 3 or 4 emails from the same person, like week after week after week, reminding me how busy I am. And hey, I know you're busy. I don't mean to take any of your time, but I'm going to send you 4 more emails taking some of your time. Like I just, all these things to me, they all seem very disingenuous. Now I understand they can work. They don't work on me. And so like, since you're interviewing me, I'm simply just telling you, from my perspective, I'm not suggesting these are bad sales techniques. They might be quite good, actually. I don't know. It's just that when I see patterns of, like, to me, it's almost a laziness. It's like, if you don't even think about what you're writing, and if you think about, like, hey, I don't mean to take your time. I know you're busy, but you've sent me 4 emails. Like, you're actually taking my time, and you're annoying me at this point. To me, a second follow-up is fair game. After that, I get annoyed. That's how I look at it.
Well said. Yeah. Jason, can you think of a time when someone sent you a cold email, a traditional sort of sales cold email, where you thought it was interesting and you did respond? Does anything come to mind in recent years where you sort of said, you know what, that was thoughtful. There's something in there that was interesting and I am going to respond to this person.
Yeah. Actually, before I answer that, one other thing came to mind that I've seen as a pattern recently. I'll get an email from somebody and there'll be clearly some text pasted in like pattern, like, and because it's in a different font size or, you know, like they're pulling from Word and their email app is accepting rich text. So like part of the paragraph will be one style and the other paragraph, part of it will be another style. And you can clearly tell they're assembling something. They're not writing something. Had they written it, it would all be in the same format. And so I'm seeing that pattern more and more, which is an immediate turnoff to me.
So fonts that are like 16 point mixed in with like 10 point mixed in with Times Roman. And
it can be even more subtle than that. It can be like 10 and 12. But what's clear is that like sentence, 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 all the same style, one sentence, a different style, sentence, 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 the same style. It's so clear that like it wasn't written, it was assembled.
So what's interesting and, about what you're saying, I'd love to speak about this, is we're not even talking, guys, we're not even talking about the message here. Like you can't even get to the message. This is just making you feel a certain way when you just see this visually, if I understand you correctly.
Yeah, and maybe I'm more sensitive to it because I'm a designer or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I don't want to take credit like that because I don't think that's true. I think people can tell when something's written and when something's assembled. Mm-hmm. You can just tell. It's the same way you can tell if something is handmade or mass produced. Like there's something you can tell. And to me, when you're writing something, you're basically writing a letter to somebody. Yeah, it comes over email, but it's a letter. And it would be weird to get a letter where you use black ink and then someone uses blue ink and then someone changes from cursive to straight, you know, whatever. Like, it'd be like, we'd all look at that and go, one person didn't write this, or like something weird is going on here. So I feel the same way about email. So anyway, that's the one thing I want to say. As far as the cold emails that have worked on me, you know, I'm trying to remember, I forwarded you a few over the years. Yes. I'm trying to remember what they were, but primarily it's like what I connect with is someone made an effort. And I don't know how to explain that necessarily right now to you on the spot, but there's moments when you read something, you go, this person wrote that to me. They did their homework. They spent some time. I wasn't one of 1,000 that day. I might've been one of 10. Okay. That's their job. They got to reach out and fine. That's totally cool. But I can tell when I'm one of 10 versus one of 1,000. And I can really tell when I'm one of 3, you know, or one of 1. Like you can really tell. So it's those moments, and it's hard to really describe it, but it's more about like someone writing clearly to me, someone who clearly knows what they're talking about and not like this generality, like, hey, I recently heard of Basecamp, which appears to be a project management system. It's like, what is that? Like,
right.
It just like appears to, like I've seen words, it's like phrases like that. It's like clearly you don't know what you're talking about, and that's fine, but do a little research and like think about how to write a sentence. Like some basic stuff is the kind of stuff I look at.
Yeah, I think one of the ones that you forwarded me, I don't know if you remember, was a person that sent you an email that the first sentence was, big fan of your book, and it was actually a picture of her with the book that she was holding.
There you go.
She said, I noticed on your site that you guys don't offer, you know, chat support. This is a way we might be able to help some more companies. Is this something that would be able to help Basecamp get more visitors into trials? It was something very short and
yes.
Something a little charming about it and personal. And the fact that she had a picture of herself with the book, you could tell she wasn't just doing that. Like she was truly interested in the book and she had read it. She had evidence of that in the email that she had read the book. It was just a little more human and charming in a sense.
To me, it's about, at that point, it's not even necessarily about the content so much. It's about the effort. Mm-hmm. I can just tell when I look at an email was effort made, and she put effort in. Like it might be a templated email, but she also took a picture of herself holding my book and like smiling and putting it in the email. And like, it's just that level of, oh, okay. This person cared a little bit, you know, thought a little bit, didn't think of me as a number. But like as a prospect, as a human being, as a person who might use their services, how do you connect with someone? Well, you talk about something they've done. You show something that you understand that they'll understand. Like it's that basic
totally get it.
Connection stuff. And that's enough for me to, at least I'm going to respond to her and go, hey, you know what? We actually tried something like this. We're not going to use it, or we're using something else. Or, hey, yeah, we're actually curious. Let me forward this to Kristen, runs our support team, and maybe they'll check it out.
Fantastic.
And that's like, it's just that, it's that spark, that moment. There needs to be a spark in there somewhere for me to go, oh, okay, this could turn into something.
Excellent. Jason, shifting gears a little bit, you know, I obviously, you know, spent some time, I look at, you know, different project management software websites that are competitors, I say, to Basecamp, and they're all riddled with things like, you know, Gantt charts and real-time visualization and features and functionalities. But I noticed every time Basecamp revs up the site, you guys never talk about stuff like that. I want you to talk a little bit about, you know, your approach and what you do from a messaging perspective is based not on features or functionality, but based on, you know, the problems or struggles or ways in which people are trying to make progress and kind of what your thinking is around that, because I think it has real implications from a cold emailing perspective as well.
Yeah. So our general approach is to connect. I want someone who sees our site to go, yep, that's me. Not, yep, this is the product I'm looking for necessarily yet. I mean, that'll come through at some point. But yeah, that's me. That's my situation. I'm in that situation. They understand that situation. And therefore, since they understand that situation, they probably have something to offer me that's relevant. That's how I look at it first. So it's a personal situational connection. So we're always trying to do that. And so we're running a variety of, if you go to basecamp.com, I don't know what you're going to see right now because we're doing a few A/B tests. But basically, there's probably a woman with her hair on fire running around like with like inbox, you know, notifications everywhere. And like, what? Who said that? I didn't know that. No one told me that. Like, this feeling of running around with your hair on fire is a feeling that a lot of small business owners have, product managers have, project managers have. And that's something they can understand. And they may not know how to relate it, but when they see that, they go, oh, that's me. Yep, that's how I feel. Okay, now I've got your attention. Now I can talk about what we can do for you.
So how do you get those? How did you get those nuggets? How do you get those?
Yeah, it comes through interviewing customers. It comes through, I mean, a variety of things. It comes through just insights over the years. Mm-hmm. It comes through our own feelings of what we know we live through and deal with every day. And then it comes by talk, comes through interviewing customers, but not about products, but about their situation. What do you, small business owner, like what are you dealing with every day? What's your life like? And you'll hear things like, oh my God, like my hair's on fire. Like there's so much stuff going on as we're growing. Like, I don't know what's happening in my business anymore. I used to know when we were three or four people, but now we're six or seven or eight. Like, I don't know who's working on what. We dropped a couple balls. A client's upset at me. I was surprised to find out something I didn't know. I used to know everything that was happening in my business. Now I like hardly know anything. I'm being surprised all the time in negative ways. Like you hear this language that they're using. The client can't see us this way. We can't do it that way again. You hear the emotion, you hear the energy, and you hear the language. And then from that, you synthesize, like, what is the composite sketch? You think about like a crime. I don't know what that person's called, who sketches,
the crime scam, the crime scene sketcher guy.
That guy. He's basically taking a composite. He's taking a description and he's kind of making a composite sketch. And that's sort of what we're doing when you hear all these words, like what's our composite sketch mostly? And for us, it's like this woman running around with her hair on fire. Or there's a few other things too, like someone pulling a kite that won't get off the ground. Like they're just dragging this kite. They're trying to get this thing, they're trying to fly something, but it's just, there's no wind, it's stuck, you know, or like trying to pick up a really heavy weight and on the heavy weight, it says project on it. You know, they're just like, I like, I've always liked political cartoons and how in one cell, you can describe a situation really, really well by exaggerating some things, emphasizing other things, popping a label on something and just creating a scene where someone goes, yep, I get that. And so that's what we're trying to do.
Yeah. So I want to get your perspective on this. Cause when I see your site iterate and when you sort of emotionally connect with people through these interviews and you get this sort of customer secret language or the conversation that's going on in their mind, from a cold email perspective, someone that wasn't doing that would talk about their value proposition in a very marketing speak way. So we'll help you get projects done faster, 20% more with Gantt charts. But when you have these insights, I'm wondering what your perspective is, Jason, on how you might be able to even use those in cold outreach. I mean, I would imagine you'd be able to take yeah. some of that language and would love to just hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah. So, we'll get general here, obviously, because yeah. we're, sure. But instead of talking about like get more things done on time or whatever, which is just like, yeah, whatever. It's more like, don't let the client down.
Yeah.
Like, okay. That's an emotional energy. Yeah. Like that's an energy, right? It's the same thing, which is like, don't miss deadlines. As you can say, like, we have a scheduling tool that helps you make sure you don't miss your deadlines. Like, okay. Or you could say like, Basecamp, well, forgive me, let's not even say Basecamp for a second because I don't want to make it about the product, but like, don't let your clients down. That's the kind of the same, don't drop a ball on a client. Don't be surprised by a client's disappointment. Like, I don't know.
Because I think that's how people talk versus how marketing would write. I mean, I think these insights that you glean from talking to customers and from your own experience, it's like, I just said my hair was on fire last week. I would never say I increased my productivity by 20%. Like, I don't talk like that.
Exactly. Nope. Exactly. That's exactly it. Like, people don't talk that way. And they might say, like, I want to get more done, but really that's like, it's not really, it's like, why? Is it because like you want to impress? Is it because, you're trying to grow your business in control just trying to get to the thing is, when you interview customers and not about the product, again, you don't talk to them about the product. You don't talk to them about features. What do you like? What don't you like? I mean, you can do those as well, but that's not what I'm trying to get at. I'm trying to, like, tell me about your day. Tell me about your situation. Tell me about your week, your month, your year. What do you do? What are you struggling with? And you'll hear this language. And from that language, like, if you just repeat that language back, if you internalize enough of it, you repeat it back, that's the kind of stuff people connect with. So if I'm talking about, like, writing a cold email or something like that, you know, I would say something like, have you noticed recently that you used to be on top of, you're no longer on top of? That things were easy when you had three people and now you have 10 not easy anymore. And have you noticed how it's not getting any easier? Like, I talk like that. Someone go, yeah, yes. Shit. Yes. I said that last week. Like, this isn't getting any easier.
Right.
Like, that's the kind of thing you want to come up with.
I think and to your point, you can really only get those nuggets by either having your experience or, like, to your point, by talking to people, not about your product. And I know you guys use one of your many frameworks. You use a jobs to be done framework for sort of getting at what these events and circumstances are that eventually cause people to make a switch.
Right. But it's all around, like, these emotional moments, and these pushes and pulls and whatnot. But anyway, you hear people say things over and over, and we actually have a collection of just, like, sentences that people say, like, their words. We don't edit them. It's just like, what exactly are people saying? And you'll see patterns, and you're like, sometimes you use those exact words. Other times you tweak them a little bit to, like, you might combine three different groups of things into one. But basically what you're trying to do is repeat what people are saying, because that's what they're dealing with every day.
Totally.
You know?
I think that has
like, don't translate it. You don't need to translate it into your product. Just say it as it is. And then you can say, like, we have something that can help you. And then you can talk about your product. But, like, first get them to go, yep, that's me.
And I think, to your point, the way you get that is you just have to talk to people. You can't be in a room with marketing thinking of value propositions, which I think 99, maybe almost all cold emails are these, like, hey, we can help you increase your productivity by 25% or reduce your costs. These kind of generic value prop statements.
I think you can get these
magic phrases.
You can weave those in, like, somewhere. Like, you can weave that in maybe at the end, but that's not the hook. The hook is, I understand the situation you're in. Everybody's in one. Everyone's in a situation, like, whatever it is. I understand the one you're in. The words I'm using make you feel like I know what you're going through. And now you've got my attention. And now you can sort of sell me. But if you just lead with the like, everything your product does and all the clients you've worked with and all that stuff, it's like, I'm busy, man. That pitch is not a pitch. It's not actually even a pitch. It's not a pitch. Right. It's a statement of like the past. Basically, totally, and like that doesn't connect. So that's how I receive this stuff. That's
good stuff, Jason. I got one more question for you. So, you also have written and spoken a lot about, you know, out teaching the competition, and one of the things that I thought was really interesting about that is, again, how do I take that concept of teaching to be able to attract customers, and how do I use that in cold outreach? So, how can I teach someone something without, you know, so many emails tell people things. We can help you do this and we can help you do that. You write about, you know, chefs teaching and then you being more attracted to their products. And again, I'm going to put you on the spot here, Jason, but how can you envision this idea of teaching? And we could pick a fictitious company, we could pick Basecamp, we could pick whatever, but how could you envision what teaching might look like from, like, an outreach perspective? So rather than just telling people stuff, how can I teach them something. One of the things we saw, just to get the juices flowing for people that are selling SEO services, are people going in and analyzing their website and saying, hey, I noticed X, Y, and Z. They make a little video of the website and say, we have a couple ideas for improving, you know, this part to be able to give you guys a lift, teaching them some maybe best practices. But why don't you get your perspective on like a teaching perspective, you know, why that's so critical in terms of Basecamp, but also how people might be able to use that from a cold outreach perspective.
Well, I think cold teaching is very hard because at least my take on it is that you can't teach someone unless they're ready to learn. And so you don't really, it's hard to just come out of the gate teaching someone something as outreach. I think you can write on your site or you can, you know, publish articles or whatever. And then if people find those, then they might take away something. But as far as like aggressively cold teaching, that's not a technique we use. I don't think it's very effective. I think that if someone signs up for your product, for example, then you can drip some teaching because they have something they can practice. Mm-hmm. Like if you think about teaching, you want people to practice. Like someone's going to, you know, they have to, you're not going to get good at something after you hear a lesson. Like you've got to practice it or read more or whatever. So I think when you've given them the instrument, like in our case, like someone signs up for Basecamp, they now have the Basecamp instrument, let's call it. And I can teach them chords along the way. They don't need to know all the chords, but I can teach them E first, then A first, then G and C. I can teach them these chords over time because now they have an instrument to play it with. You can't teach G or C or A or D if they don't have a guitar in front of them, right? Like it's just, so I think the thing is if you sign up for Basecamp and then we start teaching you how to use it in different ways, then I think the teaching makes sense because there's like a slot where that fits and then you can practice it. You go, oh, I've been doing to-do lists maybe a different way. Here's another way I can try to do to-do lists now and I have the thing to do it with. So if you just if you just outreach with teaching and they don't have an instrument, you know, this is a fictitious thing, right? An instrument, Basecamp's a tool, it's not an instrument necessarily, but like if they don't have anything to play it on or play it with or get better at it on, I feel like it's just lost.
Let me challenge you a little bit on it. I get your perspective on this. Let me challenge you a little bit on it. So let's say, for instance, Verizon was a potential prospect of mine, Verizon, the telecom company. And I had an idea on their website because selecting one of their packages was very confusing. There's like seven packages and 50,000 ways in which they're describing bits and bytes and nobody cares about that, knows what it means. Yep. And I say, you know what, guys, I want to teach you about a different perspective I have that might be able to help you do this, you know, sort of a best practice, not a best practice, but here's some ideas and thoughts that I have around that. So proactively being able to find a problem that you see someone maybe having and being able to connect the dot and teach them through a video or through copy, you know, what might be a better way to be able to, you know, improve that. You know, we'd love to hear your thoughts on that, if any.
Yeah, to me, that's not teaching, though. That's just like showing a better way. To me, teaching is about like giving somebody a skill or helping someone find or develop a skill that they can use over and over and over and over and over, basically.
Like a chef would with the cooking.
Knife techniques or something, right? Where like you can get better, right? To me, that's like showing someone how something's bad on their website and saying like, here's a better solution for that is not teaching. That's like just sharing and showing, and that's totally fair game and fine. We used to do that a lot when we were new in the game, when we were a web design company way back. We would do this thing called 37 Better. Where we
37
would,
where Better?
We used to be called 37 Signals is what the name of the business was originally. We do this thing called the 37 Better Project, where we would go around to sites that we use all the time that frustrated us, and we would redesign them and just put them up publicly, a page. Basically, like we redid FedEx, we redid an online bank, and it was just one screen. But it was like, here's what we, if we were given the chance to redo FedEx's site, here's what we would do with it. If we were given the chance to redo Chase or JP Morgan's site, here's what we would do with it. And we did a series of these. And that wasn't teaching, that was just sharing and showing, but it showed it was cool because we didn't have to get FedEx to give us any work. We just redid FedEx. We didn't do it to intend to get FedEx's business. What we did was we said, let everyone see this because we've made this public, And now other people who have other businesses who are like, wow, look what they did with FedEx's site. Look what they would have done with FedEx's site. I'm curious to see what they would do with our site. And so then they would come to us and we would do work for them.
So you kind of proactively looked at sites that you thought you could improve from a conversion or a design perspective. And
just redid one
page.
And just did it.
And
put it up publicly. Publicly so anyone can see it. Never intending to get the business of the company we redid, but to say, here's the thing. Especially when you're starting out, this might be beneficial for people who are listening to this who are starting out. You don't have a portfolio yet, right? You don't have a lot of success stories yet. You don't have a lot of hits yet, necessarily. So what do? People ask this all the time. Like, they're asking me, like, I'm new. Like, how do I get work? Well, you have to invent work then. Like, go off and redo Nike's logo, redo McDonald's logo. Make your own fake portfolio of real things and show people what you would do if you were given the chance. And then it's like, what's cool about that is that you're showing what you would do with a big brand name, even though they didn't hire you. But it's like, look what I did with FedEx. Look what I did with UPS. And you'd say, of course, they didn't hire me to do this. This is just what I would do. And this is how much I care about this. It frustrates me to no end, so I redesigned it. And then someone might go, well, I'd love to see what you can do for us. So, but anyway,
that's kind of nice what you're saying, because you don't have to wait for anything.
You don't have to wait. Right. And you're not going to get any big gig. No, FedEx is not going to come and hire you when you're nobody. Right. But you can redo FedEx's site, page of it. My point, though, is we're a bit off track, I guess. It's like, none of that is teaching. Teaching is about helping someone develop a skill. In order to do that, you need to be able to play with something to get better at it. And so I think if you teach without having something to play with, it's not really teaching. If you show, then that's planting an idea in someone's head that they can maybe buy your services or inquire about something. So they're different things.
Jason Fried, it's always a pleasure chatting with you.
Thanks, Josh. Always good to talk to you.
Have a good one.
All right, dude. Later on. Bye. Later.